Hey, Alex.
How doing?
You know what I hate?
What's that?
Just about everything about WW84, Wonder Woman 1984.
I got a lot of notes. I got things to say. But in my kind of summation, is this movie is the first time that DC has managed for me to have a completely meh film. I didn't hate it. I also didn't really like anything about it. It happened. It was like the first Thor movie where it's like, I mean, it's a movie. I don't want to watch it, but it's just a meh. I didn't find it polarizing at all. There was no joy. There was no hate. This must be Commander Data from the famous Star Trek The Next Generation felt. Nothing.
When he watched Wonder Woman 1984.
Yes, and then wrote a poem about it, and his cat spot.
Yeah. I disagree. I think it's almost like when you were talking about, way back when, talking about The Fifth Element, and you're like, every choice was an odd one. Every choice in this one is completely baffling to me. Why they chose to do, like, why is it even in the 80s? None of it really makes any sense in that way. Anything that ends up happening, either bafflingly stupid or they hold your hand through it. And just horrible, horrible moral core at the center of this movie. Just awful.
I get the moral core thing. Yeah. Every choice in this is weird. And it is not a well put together film at all.
No, it feels like various versions of different movies. Like different drafts of Wonder Woman that they're like, well, we like this. Like, you could have made an entire movie just about the cheetah stuff, and that would have been fine. But they were like, no, we want kind of some of this, and then some of this, this element over here, we're just going to jam that together. Like, the opening feels very tacked on, and in fact, kind of is. I read an interview with Patty Jenkins where she's like, well, I didn't want to go back to Themyscira or whatever it's called. But then I thought about people who, like, were unfamiliar with this universe. Like, if you were seeing this for the first time on a plane or something. Why are you making movies for those people? Like, this is a sequel. In theory, they should have some, you know what I mean? Like, whatever.
Her being like this kind of corporate filmmaker for these films, I think perfect proof why it's a terrible idea and exactly why they hired her to do a Star Wars movie, which, you'll listen to what your hires up say? Okay.
Yeah. And I think that's some of it too, is that I don't know how much of this, how much of the blame for this to throw at her feet for something like the bad action scenes and stuff like that, and how much to just go like, well, that's the system now. Like, much in the same way, there was that director that was initially supposed to do Black Widow, and the people at Marvel, like the production company, told her, don't worry about the action scenes, we'll take care of that. And she was like, well, I don't want to do half a movie, that's dumb, and so walked away. So I don't know if it's something where you know, they're like, we're trying to Marvelize and we're going to try to automate it, or, you know, don't worry about, you just worry about this stuff, we'll worry about this stuff.
I wouldn't be surprised, because this seems like a movie by committee at times.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And, the Patty Jenkins doing a Star Wars thing makes so much sense in that context. Yep. But I didn't hate a lot of, and again, I didn't like it, but all of the disparate parts that they chose to do, if done more competently, it's like, I think I like the ideas in this movie. Like, how am I wording this? Like, if I were at the table, if I were at the pitch meeting, I liked a lot of the stuff in the movie. They just didn't do it very well. Like, the Wishmaster thing. I kind of like that idea. It's poorly done in this, but I like it as an idea. The Chitara, that's a Thundercat. Cheetah? Is that?
I believe it's just Cheetah.
I don't know. I don't know the Wonder Woman mythos all that well, but that's kind of cool. This meek lady that finds an object. Okay, fine. I mean, it's not the most original idea, but fine. But like, throwing it in is like, she's like the Harvey Dent in this to the Joker Batman, where it's just like, why is this even in this movie? You know, it's just like, oh, you just want it to be like the moral story that go along with to articulate what it is, like Harvey Dent's fall. Okay. It's just, there's a lot of, but like, that idea is fine. Like, I like it being set in the 80s as a concept, but they didn't do enough 80s stuff.
There was
like
nothing. There was the mall.
There was the mall, and there was the fashion show part with Chris Pine.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry that I'm going back to my old Alex talks about dudes' teeth ways, but Chris Pine looked like shit in this movie, and I don't get the thought behind that.
He does look a little bit more haggard. I don't know if it's just because he's a reanimated corpse in someone else's body.
Which sucks, because I thought Chris Pine had a lot of life in this as an actor, other than what he looked like. So, like, trying to get him to... It's hard to get his energy up when he looks tired.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, this sucks. Like, the one highlight, I thought him and Pedro Pascal both got the tone of the movie, and then the movie didn't have the right tone for their performance, so it made it even worse.
Yeah, I think I like Pedro Pascal. Like, he's comic booky villain enough, and I think I think Chris Pine is charming enough, but I think what really helps him is the fact that he's cast next to an absolute zero. I do not understand Gal Gadot. I do not understand why she's in anything. Yeah. She sucks. I said last time that in the first one that, like, boy, it'd be better if it was Gina Carano, maybe. But after watching The Mandalorian, Gina Carano's not a great actress, but it would at least be something.
Gina Carano is acting, at least. Acting like someone that isn't a transphobic pile of shit. Get it? Because she's a transphobe.
Yes.
But Gina Carano is actually making choices. Gal Gadot is terrible. And I gave her the benefit of the doubt the first movie. The character she's playing is a little more childlike in that first. Not childlike, but innocent or whatever. She doesn't have the world experience. So, mm-hmm. It kind of worked a little bit for me. This one, she's been around forever, and she is less than nothing to the role. Some of the action sequences, it looked like kind of all right that she was having fun with it. Like, she actually, there was some life to her there, but anytime she was speaking was, it's real bad. Like, I don't know if you can recast, like, they've recently recast the Batwoman show mm-hmm. on Fox or whatever, CW. Maybe that's a precedent. Like, could they just recast Wonder Woman?
Yeah, I don't, yeah, get Ruby Rose back there. She sucks, but she's better than Gal Gadot. Like, just anybody.
I'm going to say she was equal shitty to Gal Gadot, at least in the Batwoman show. That's the only thing I've seen her in. She's got that same Gal Gadot kind of delivery of dead-eyed. Like, she's not, I can't imagine being a scene partner to her of, like, just getting nothing back.
No, that sucks. And it, particularly when you have someone that, even when she's being, like, the nerd, Kristen Wiig is still, like, personable and, you know, you don't mind hanging out with this character. But then she's like, oh, I just want to be like this person. Hello, yes, I like antiques.
Yeah.
Great, cool.
Kristen Wiig was fine. But again, I think if she had someone to act off of, it would have been a lot better.
Well, she was fine, but, like, it's also, like, a dumb, yet another, like, I'm a nerdy scientist who interacts with the main character in a comic book movie. Like Jim Carrey in Batman Forever, the Iron Man 3, I almost called him Guy Fawkes, Guy Pierce. Not
was Michelle Pfeiffer a scientist in Batman?
No, but it's the same kind of thing. Because
she literally turns into another cat thing and becomes super good at fighting.
Yeah, but it's basically, nerd becomes, gets kind of obsessed.
Or,
with...
you know what it is? That other Batman with Poison Ivy is the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just, it's that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But even then, like, their kind of fledgling friendship would have made, that was kind of interesting, but they didn't really do enough with it.
Well, that was the worst spot in the film for me was when we'll swing back and try to do a little bit of this in order, but like when they're having dinner that first time and Gal Gadot is going, oh, you're so funny. She sounds like Tommy Wiseau now that I'm thinking about it. But where she's like just saying what the other person is. Oh, you're so nice. Oh, you're mm-hmm. so funny. You're hilarious. I've not laughed this long for how it's like, who the fuck wrote this dialogue? One. Yeah. And then, I mean, I guess, you know, kind of in a George Lucas way, I guess if you got charismatic people, you would forget how dog shit that is. But boy, coming out of her mouth was, I was getting, I hate this term, but I don't know how to word it otherwise. I was getting douche chills from how bad that scene was.
Uh-huh. Well, I like the concept of it, particularly because it seems like they're trying to go for this hero is going to be slightly different than your sort of male counterparts. Like, I appreciate they didn't shoot a laser into the sky necessarily, even though it was still like, you know, radio signals or satellite signals coming down. You know, they try to do some different things. And so if you want to have a hero that isn't just brute force, but yet isn't just like Marvel quippiness, you're trying to get somewhere in the middle, like you need to have something there. And there's just not with Gal Gadot. And certainly the script is not doing her any favors as well. I wish there was some way they could have worked in the phrase monkey paw four or five more times, because I didn't get that comparison.
Did you notice that scene where they first see the homeless guy and he's reading Waiting for Godot?
Yeah, I in fact have in my notes Waiting for Godot. Fuck you, movie.
Yep. Anyway, all right. So let's talk about this movie a little bit in order, because we can there's gonna be a lot of stuff that like we can just skip through, because like there's
nothing happens for the first hour.
Yeah.
Nothing.
We open with, they're doing like, American Ninja Warrior, I mean, I guess Thermoscarian Ninja Warrior. And it's the kids doing like an obstacle course, and it's pointless. She cheats for a second, and I think that's the lesson, and I'm not sure. That's all my points of the first 20 minutes of the film.
This whole thing makes less sense than Quidditch.
Oh, less sense than Quidditch is... Oh, that's a tough... That's a brutal statement you just made. I just really want to sit with that for a second.
It's true, though. I mean, like, because I don't even know what's going on. Like, some of it just looks like Cirque du Soleil stuff happening.
Yeah, okay.
Like, the people are kind of doing those weird climbing things. And then, yeah, so she's part of this big race. And what I don't understand is so it's this, like, almost triathlon thing. She's riding a horse. She's swimming, doing all kinds of stuff. And at one point, you have to... she's, like, 8, but with all the other... She's competing against adults, because why not? But she's supposed to ride and shoot these, like, colored smoke things as she goes along to mark her place and, like, score some points. At some point, she falls off her horse and, yeah, takes this slide to get back to exactly where she knows where her horse is going for some reason. And she's just about to win when Robin Wright shows back up, pulls her aside and is like, nope, you tried to cheat. But she wasn't going to win anyway. She missed all those other stops. Why did you even have her? You know what I mean? Like... How is she even still in the running, even if she threw the javelin through the thing first? It was just Calvin ball. I have no idea.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the lesson you're supposed to get here is that like shortcuts are bad. Don't take them. And while it's always a treat to see Robin Wright again, this scene was absolutely not necessary.
Really pointless.
Yeah.
I'm fine with them starting on the island. I'd be fine with this scene, but well,
they're never not going to start on the island.
It had nothing to do with the rest of the movie, which is, makes me hate it. Because like, I kind of like the American Ninja Warrior thing. There's some of the stunts look neat. Like, it was fine, but it has nothing to do with the film. Just don't be on the island at all.
Yeah, it wants to be involved with the sort of the larger message of the film, but we'll get into that at the end.
Yeah,
but,
just fail monster. And it did set up because they're like, look to the golden god Asteria. Mm-hmm. And it's that wings that you see from all the promotional pictures.
Yeah,
like,
which,
oh,
I mean, they're not going to stop doing that because... it's a chance to watch a little girl kick ass, and for young kids and 20 somethings that write for Refinery 29 to be like, that's me up there. And that's fine. Like, that's,
I think
there's nothing wrong with that.
See, if that was a B story, like if they kept cutting back and forth between her modern day, you know, 1984 modern day and Thermoscura. And then like, you know, halfway through the movie, we drop Thermoscura, but like we watch the lesson get learned and that lesson pays off at the end of the film. And then obviously all the rest of the shit in the movie doesn't happen, but it'd be like, as a plot device, I think it'd be cool. Cause that little girl did a good job. I like watching the Amazons do stuff. Like, it's much more interesting than a mall in fucking DC or where the fuck they were. Mm-hmm. That'd be fine. But like, yeah, just having to be there for 15 minutes just to make the movie longer was dog shit.
Yeah. And speaking of dog shit, and this is a very specific complaint and does not really matter, but those opening titles were ugly as hell.
Oh, yeah.
Just like really cheap looking. That was like cutting edge in 2005, what you're doing right now. What is this?
Yeah.
And I always love a big flashy title sequence, but just it was ugly.
No, it was.
The like, weird even colors the, were.
The font choice was ugly. Yeah. Two shows in a row we talk about font, but the font choice is ugly. The score, especially starting this, is really bad. I'm not saying you should go back and listen, but the opening orchestral stuff is, it sounds as if they bought it. You know, you can buy like pre-made shit on the internet, like, oh, here's 5 minutes of ambient orchestral music to have in the background of a movie. Like, it seems like that. Like, well, really shitty.
This is a thing we've talked about before where people will play these temp tracks. They'll be like, I want it to kind of sound like this. People make these sound-alike tracks and you can kind of play them. And then people fall in love with that temp track and then they just like make it sound like that. And so you kind of get this flattening of everything. And yeah, it drives me nuts now because there's so many movies where, because that's part of my job is choosing those music like that sometimes, is there are times in movies now where I think about like that sound, this is an emotional scene, but that soundtrack sounds like shit I would have pulled for this video about yoga, you know?
Yeah.
And it's awful.
Yeah. What's that called? Like, what would you call that? Like
library music, stock music?
Library music. That's a great way to put it. Yes. Yeah. It sounds like library music. So now we're in 1984 reasons.
For reasons.
I mean, we might as well talk about it now. Why is this movie set in 1984?
Well, I'll say this. So it makes sense to jump ahead because completely washes Wonder Woman's hands of any involvement in failing to stop the Holocaust because that was looming large. We talked last episode. That was looming large that this was coming down the pike. And they just jumped
Did the Holocaust happen in the DC universe?
I think it would have had to have. I mean, I don't know I know Marvel was much more like, this is New York, this is LA.
Well,
where,
that's what I mean, you know, is I wonder if the Holocaust was even a thing in DC, like, because they don't have our cities. I know, Captain America, you know, Marvel thing, punched Hitler.
Right.
I wonder if they just didn't have it, and so they can just sit, you know, like in continuity terms, for the nerds to think about this, other nerds than us. They could just say, oh, well, you know, World War II wasn't an aspect of the DC universe.
Yeah, I mean, but like it's hard to write it out of there if you're going to have all these, you know, this sort of larger geopolitical landscape that they want to have. I don't know. Well, Patty Jenkins, again, in an interview, claimed that she chose this year because it was the, quote, the height of Western civilization and our current modern belief system. What?
No, I can follow that. Like, that's kind of the height of materialism and like kind of the darker aspects of where we're living now. That's where kind of the trickle down.
I don't think that ended.
Dirt.
I don't think that ended in until much later. I don't think it peaked till much later.
No, I think I could see that as being peak because that's mid Reaganomics.
I suppose, but again, like if that reflected anything in the script or the movie, that'd be fine.
Oh no! Oh! I wasn't agreeing with that. Oh heaven forfend! I'm just saying as an abstract concept that has nothing to do with her film. Like this sentence that she said. It, like, she could have said, oh, yeah, and that's why The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe is a great book. I agree. It has nothing to do with your movie in the same way the height of Western materialism is 1984. That's a valid thought. It has nothing to do with your film.
And honestly, their 1984 made me think of 2015 and Back to the Future 2 because it was, like, shiny and nice.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's like there's part of it that's a little reactionary in terms of, well, you know, back then everything was so much better. But I have to agree because I too think that the world was better before this movie came out. Yeah, because it's like there's not other than the fun dress up thing later. There's not like 80s music throughout the whole thing. This mall thing,
was baffling.
I did get kind of nostalgic from because I'm from the Midwest and malls give me power. So I did kind of enjoy seeing some of that. But it also it feels a little strange that we are introduced from Wonder Woman who at the end of the last movie fought the God of War. Is that she's stopping mall crimes now?
Oh yeah, she's saving some lady from falling off a bridge on her wedding day.
Yeah.
she saved that one lady from a sweet Trans Am, which was kind of awesome though.
Yeah,
I mean, not like, the saving, but I like to see a Trans Am.
It made me think there's a board game I have. It's based on the Marvel universe, and you when you start you select a villain and you draw randomly from a couple of piles of cards the villain and like what their scheme is. And you can be like Galactus, the world leader, and his scheme is, I'm going to rob a bank. It's like, it doesn't make sense. And I kind of felt the same way. We're like, well, you've gone so big. I think that's kind of why I like Batman being this kind of contained universe. Because he's like, no, I'm beating up mentally ill people. But like sometimes one of them gets really crazy and like something happens. But it's still like the same thing where I'm finding the same kind of crime. But as soon as it gets like international, it gets a little weird.
So her selling mall crime. Yeah, it's the last movie I was fighting. Yeah, the God of War, David Thewlis.
Mm-hmm.
And also what a weird robbery thing where the one guy just freaks out and gets a hostage. And
yeah,
it's
so
really
these,
convoluted.
Yeah, it's these guys rob like a Kay's Jewelers or whatever. And they're like, no, we don't want what's up front. We know you guys were secretly running ancient artifact black market out of the back of the mall. You know, the back of the store in the mall. Which fine, whatever. And sure enough, there are, and Wonder Woman is there to save the day. And when she shows up, one of the criminals freaks out and grabs a kid and holds her over the edge of a balcony. And I don't understand what he thought was going to happen there.
Also, why do mall cops have guns in this movie?
I don't know. It's the 80s, I guess. I don't know.
But
I will give the criminal this. Like, he Michael Jackson'd a kid in the better way.
He put two fingers in?
No, he held a kid over a balcony.
Oh, I know. I just want to pick a pedo joke.
Yeah, I know you did. But I just like that there's two ways to Michael Jackson a kid, and he chose the better way.
Oh, yeah. Okay, fair enough. I totally missed your joke and just said it again to you.
Yeah.
Yeah, just totally didn't get it. Just right over my head. I think you're so nice. I'm usually the one that makes the pedo jokes. It didn't even like occur to me that's what was happening right there.
I'm the good one.
Yeah, you're like the sweet Midwestern boy. I mean, mm-hmm. you're fueled by hate, and
yeah,
really, I'm the good one if you think about it.
Like all the Midwestern boys.
So this is where I still have a bit of hope for the movie, because I'm like, all right, I don't know what that opening sequence was, but you know, I don't hate it yet because I don't know that it has nothing to do with the film. And then this sequence, I'm like, all right, this is kind of fun. And then this is where the movie kind of, the first signal comes up of like, oh, this is not going to be great, is where they have the montage of Wonder Woman walking around being lonely.
Yeah, and they show the guys watch like 45 times.
It's,
and like, oh, she's so sad in her absolutely gorgeous apartment, and like, you know, yeah, stunning this life.
This woman is an 11 out of 10 smoke show. She's incredibly smart. She's rich. She has a great job. But she's like, oh, I missed that one guy I fucked before he died on the plane.
We had sex with once. I knew him for like a week.
I get missing people. I am prone to melancholy and nostalgia. I get it, lady, but your life is fucking rad. Like, get your, and also that where the waiter takes the other flatware from the table.
Yes.
And she's just looking at like, oh, I wish somebody else was eating off of me. It's just, mm-hmm. Oh, it's that was like this red flag of, oh boy. Because up to that point, I'm like, what are the reviewers so mad at? Like, this movie seems, you know, totally fine, but it's like, oh, this is getting shitty. And
well, yeah, it felt like a Hallmark movie or like one of those romantic comedies where it's like, well, I have everything, but I need a man.
Yeah.
Which is great when you're, you know, a female superhero. But there's in the montage of those like shots of her apartment stuff like that, and you see these photos of her, like her life. And there's one picture of her with this old woman, and I swear to God, I thought it was Martin Scorsese's mom, which would have been hilarious if they're like, they added that in there as a fuck you. You don't like these movies?
Yeah.
We're hanging out with your mom, dude.
That would be great. I wonder if that, I guess that old lady was somebody from the first movie. I guess.
Must have been. Yeah, it was Dr. Poison or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Wonder Woman did the lonely thing. And somewhere around here, they introduce Kirsten Schaal.
Kirsten Wiig.
Kirsten Wiig. Oh, yeah, yeah. Kirsten Schaal's the other lady named Kirsten. Well, the rest of my notes, I think I call her Schaal, so we're just going to have to deal with that.
It's fine. I've been saying Godot this whole time, so it's whatever.
Yeah, that's...
We're good at our job.
We're introduced to her, and she is doing some very bad, clumsy acting. And and so much to the point, I'm like, oh, is this like a fake out? Like, she's going to be really, really athletic and cool once she gets in her office. No, she's just like bad at acting clumsy.
Mm-hmm. Well, because she can't walk in heels, which is the sign of a good woman, I guess. It's weird. I don't get it. But hey, good news for fans of Kristen Wiig's feet, because you're going to see a lot of them in this movie.
Kristen Schaal. you fucking grosso. No, you're right, though.
Yeah. Quentin Tarantino is like, this is my favorite movie of the year.
Yeah, bad acting or heels. I don't know. Heels are stupid. It's an awkward introduction. And, you know, at this point, I think this is where my opinion of the film is solidified into. Well, this is going to be what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere around here, how do we find out that the wish stone is real? Or does that comes later?
Well, that comes later. So what happens is that it's Kristen Wiig's first day. She's very much in awe of Diana Prince, because Diana Prince is just, you know, where she's clumsy and awkward, everyone just floats into the place and gets everyone's attention and all this stuff. And Kristen Wiig is tasked with, hey, the FBI has all these stuff they recovered from that robbery, from the mall robbery. They want us to look at
that's
it,
right,
and like make sure, you know, assess the value of this stuff or like figure, authenticate it, whatever. And she's like, picks up one and is like, oh, well, I can look at this piece of crap. I can tell it's a fake because it's got this crystal or something. She's a gemologist or something.
Citrine, John.
Yeah, whatever.
Remember where Gal Gadot started laughing about how lame and dorky citrine is? She's like, ha ha, it is lame, ha ha, dorky, citrine, ha ha.
You're tearing me apart, Rock.
Yeah, I really felt that a lot.
But then she inadvertently, is it right now that she inadvertently wishes on the wishing stone?
I think we can just say it happens now. I think it actually happens a little bit later, like they go to dinner and shit, but whatever. At some point around now, she inadvertently wishes to be like Diana.
Right. Well, Diana inadvertently wishes for Chris Pine. She's like, my wish would be, and like then like this puff of air hits her face, and
yes, that does happen right about now. Yeah,
yeah, because it's this one guy, this like random dude, like grabs and is like, I wish I had a coffee, and then someone shows up with like a random coffee, and
that's right.
Like, oh, so and so didn't get their coffee. It's like, oh, it works. Look at that.
I actually did kind of like that bit. I was like, oh, that's a good way to show it.
No, it's fine. But then they end up going out to dinner like that night, just like to hang out or something. And
yeah, this is where we talked about the worst conversation ever. Yeah.
Right. And then on her way home, she's giving her leftovers to her friend, this homeless man who's reading Waiting for Godot. And she gets attacked by a dude who sees her stumbling heels and is like, hey, baby, let me help you. And then he's like starts to basically attack her. And Diana shows up and kicks his ass. But just sort of like, oh, I was just headed back to work to get my keys.
Yeah.
And doesn't like, oh, it's easy. I took a self-defense class. You can totally kick a dude halfway across a football field. No biggie.
In 1984. In the DC, because in the DC universe, it's established that kind of the first superhero is like kind of Batman, Superman, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because I was going to say, they're in a universe where superheroes are around, but yeah, okay, they haven't shown up yet. I forget it. Because I was going to say, if you're in a universe where Superman, you're like, oh, you just saw somebody throw something, you'd go, oh, fuck, it's a superhero.
Yeah, I mean, in this particular universe, I don't think Superman shows up until later.
So it's actually fine to kind of just gloss over her throwing a dude. It could be whatever that Israeli martial art is that he used to know the name
Krav Maga.
Oh, nice. Well done.
I think it's after that she Kristen Wiig goes back to the office and wishes she was like Diana.
Yeah.
Strong and smart and sexy.
Maxwell Lord visits the museum.
Oh, yes.
And starts hitting on Kirsten Schaal. I'm doing it the whole episode. Really hard. Because he wants to get to the wish stone.
Mm-hmm.
During this episode, so he invites her to this party. And because of that, I think Diana kind of was picking up on that. He's like a little shady. And I think she's going to make sure that her friend, Chitara, is going to be okay.
Like, So Pedro Pascal, who I do enjoy in this.
He's so over the top and fun. It's great.
So he's showing up as Maxwell Lord. And I may just be a podunk country boy from Omaha, Nebraska. But even I know that canonically speaking, Maxwell Lord is a powerful, smart businessman and not some fly-by-night huckster. He's a nefarious, evil businessman. And wishing is not a Maxwell Lord thing. That is more the providence of a Dr. Destiny, who is more of a magical villain. He's in the Sandman, whatever. He does the wishes, seeking dream amulets, casting people to various zones, things of that nature, but they combined them inexplicably. I just think they wanted to make him Trump, and I think that was a mistake.
Absolutely, that's what they're doing. I didn't know that that's a character. I don't know DC super well. I read a bunch of Batman. It doesn't matter.
Like I don't care that they wronged Maxwell Lord, but I just think like this obvious like, oh, he's a huckster and he's kind of got blonde hair. Okay, cool. I see where this is going. And it's also they never end up explaining how he learned about the wish stone. It's implied that he's been after it for a while and like the crimes he's committed crimes to do it later, but it's not, there's never any indication of how he knows what it is, how he knows that it works. It's just,
well, he's somebody of he's like Mexican in this, right?
Yeah, I believe. Yes. He's,
so since it is a movie, so somebody with brown skin, knows about something, he probably has an abuelita that told him in mystic tones about the sacred artifact, you know, just try to mystic up the brown people.
Right. Like the, Mayan guy in that very important scene that we absolutely
needed. We're going to get to that, but, anyway, we'll swing back around to that because there's going to be a lot of awful.
Yeah, but Pedro Pascal is charming enough.
I like how he's playing it where he's being charming, but he's also sleazing it up. Like, he really hits the tone super well. And it's kind of funny because his natural charm at being good at acting is kind of bleeding through, too. So, like, there's, like, this, like, three-tiered thing going on. It's like, oh, God. And it's also, like, a balm on a burn after hearing Gal Gadot talk. Like, having somebody actually put in a performance, like, oh, this is great.
Yeah, like, he's bringing some fun to it.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so they go to this party, and it's really annoying because all these guys are hitting on her. And I'm sure if that's really, really actually, like, annoying. Being catcalled, all that stuff, that's got to suck. But, like, it's not presented as anything, like, other than a mild annoyance to her, you know?
This is Kristen Wiig you're talking about.
No, I'm talking about Gal Gadot.
Okay, because there's like, a Kristen Wiig sequence where she gets hit on a lot too.
Yeah, but she's like, oh, I'm getting attention now. This is kind of exciting.
Okay, I gotcha. Yeah, yeah.
But like, it seems like it's trying to underscore that this is why she doesn't go out much. But it was just like, yeah, fine, whatever. Until one guy keeps bothering her, and then he says a line of dialogue to her that was apparently in the first movie. I kind of had to piece it together from context clues that meant something.
Oh, when she meets pseudo Chris Pine?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, so what he said was the last lines he said, that was his dying words, was sure. What he said.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember that because...
Okay, I'm glad someone does.
Yeah. Well, because that's like right before he sacrificed himself. Because I actually liked Wonder Woman, the first one, up until there. Because that was right before Ares showed up and the whole movie goes to absolute shit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's Chris Pine coming back. And just to circle back around... No.
So this guy, like, he doesn't look like Chris Pine, but he says the things to her and then, like, fakes giving her his watch. A Casio watch. And then it like pans back and he is Chris Pine.
By the way, I like the casting of that guy because he looks like if you couldn't afford Chris Pine for the TV version of Wonder Woman, you would hire that guy. He's got like almost the same face. Like he's got that same kind of blocky thing. He's got puffy hair, but that's the same kind of puffy hair.
Right. But here's a gigantic problem. What happened to that guy?
Well, he comes back at the end.
Yeah, he comes back. But what happened to him in that time?
I mean, I like to think that he's trapped inside an eternal darkness inside of his own mind, and all he can do is scream and claw the walls and just hope it finally ends.
Why not just have Chris Pine come back?
I don't know.
Because you know what she then does? She rapes this man.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, there's a real...
She absolutely... Like, having seen Possessor, Brandon Cronenberg's Possessor, which I highly recommend, it is a dark movie, but it addresses these kind of things. And it's... Yeah, that was the first thing that came to my mind is like... Well, then who's that? Where's that guy? And particularly when you find out that Chris Pine has been living at his apartment and all this stuff, like, where's this guy's friends? Like, what's his whole life? It's why did you do this? Why didn't you just have Chris Pine show up?
The rape thing is I was raised in the 80s, as were you. So my brain is still in, hey, she can't rape him because she's a smoke show and all guys have a dick and they don't care. But like literally you had your body stolen and then somebody used your dick for you. Like there is also
no chance for you to consent.
But I wonder if Patty Jenkins is the reason I bring it up that way is I wonder if her age is kind of her brain's a little bit in our world where she just, I mean, I'm saying in the wrong.
This had to go through so many people. And I'm assuming old ass
executives. Like I'm guessing that up the chain from Patty Jenkins, she's the youngest person in that group.
Probably, but it's just
it's not okay. Because and the like, fact that never, no one's it talking never gets about brought it,
up, and then at the end when she just leaves him in a riot, like what?
Hmm. Yeah. Why are there no think pieces about this? By the way, because this seems like this should be.
Oh, there are.
Oh, okay. I haven't heard that yet.
There's already some or like stuff that's mentioned it. And in fact, this woman I was going to shout out later, Roxana Haddadi, who wrote this great article about the trashy Middle Eastern stereotypes that are throughout this movie, wrote another article because there's something about this. There's a trend of some movies coming out right now where this is kind of a questionable issue. And this Wonder Woman was in there as well.
There's a trend of movies with body swap dude rape?
I don't know, just body swap, but like questions about male consent.
Oh, gotcha. Okay, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, because that just immediately like stuck out to me. And the fact that it's like never mentioned.
Yeah. And we're definitely got to get to the Middle Eastern stereotype stuff when we get to the oil, because this movie is very 1984, even to its way it deals with male consent and deals with anybody from the Middle East. Because boy, I mean, it's a Borat character or a Sacha Baron Cohen character.
Pretty much. And I mean, so... Basically, so she runs away with this new Chris Pine to go bang. And Kristen Wiig gets with Max Lord, who attempts to seduce her and steals the wishing stone.
I really liked Pedro Pascal in that part where he's walking through his office and he's strong and cool. And then he gets up to the actual like office floor. There's one person working there that's also working the front desk and everything's gutted and there's no phones.
Yeah. And he's got just piles of bills.
Yeah.
Up. It's odd. Just what they do with this character is so strange because he is this huckster but they do want you to have this like empathy for him. I don't necessarily think that's, you know, a bad thing to have with villains. Like, I don't know. I feel like it was really, really sympathetic to him throughout the whole thing.
Yeah.
He wasn't particularly villainous in a lot of, you know, he was trying to get power and stuff like that, but it just, I don't know. It'll go into my whole rant at the end, I guess. But I don't even know how he starts with the wishing.
Well, he wishes to be the Dreamstone.
Okay, that's what he does first, is he wishes to be the Wishing Stone. Like, which is, again, like, why? That is so needlessly convoluted.
Yeah.
Because even if the idea is like, well, if I wish that I'm the wishing, because the Wishing Stone is like, what's that thing? Monkey's paw, I think. I wish the movie would have said something about that.
I don't think they mentioned it.
Yeah. But that, like, apparently, like, it'll give, but it'll take something from you. Like, not necessarily, you know, you don't necessarily know what that is. I don't know if he's trying to get around that. It's like, but if I'm the Wishing Stone, then I can just take what other people, you know, I can make the claims, and this wish won't backfire on me in any way, which doesn't make any sense.
No.
It's just asinine. The whole thing is that the whole rest of the movie, is him trying to collect power when he could have just gone, hey, I wish I was the most powerful man in the world. And that would have been
it. No. So what you missed, and I'm not saying that it doesn't, you're right that it doesn't make sense, but what you missed was you can only get one wish.
Right.
So, but with every wish, there comes a consequence.
Yes.
So what he needs to do is he tricks people into wishing for something that technically helps him, although is a wish for that other person. And then he does the kind of the rider stipulation at the end of it.
Right.
So you can't just wish for him to be the most powerful person, because no one would wish that. But then all the blowback would go back on him. So what he's trying to do is worm his way to the top so that everybody can wish for small amounts, and all the blowback would, like, that's when he wishes for his, like, the writer on the contract is him getting his health back.
No, I understand that. But my point is that initial wish that he made would have blowback.
Well, yeah, it did. But it's all the blowback, like we're watching that with him getting sick.
Yeah, he's dying. So it's a dumb plan.
I'm not saying it's not a dumb plan, but what I'm saying is the first wish he couldn't do, because that amount of power, I think the inverse corollary of the amount of blowback would basically, you'd be dead.
Would it? Because there's no rhyme or reason for what gets taken. You know what I mean? Like, he's great. Like, end, because he's granting wishes. And he's like, oh, I'm going to take your health. You're that. You're that.
See, I took it as, because he was trying to, like, climb the ladder to the top, I took it as you can't do it in one big swoop or the side effects would off you. But yeah, you're right. I guess I didn't actually, like, that wasn't stated that way.
I mean, yeah, I see what you're getting at there, but it's like, well, what's the point of having a wishing stone?
No, you're right. Yeah, no, I think I just kind of copy edited it and didn't realize I was doing that. Yeah.
Well, I think the movie wants you to in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
I think that, like I said, they don't explain very much about this wishing stone, but you're supposed to fill it in, like, okay, I kind of get the idea. I'm gonna go with this. Meanwhile, you know, there's other things that they just desperately hold your hands on, and it's really weird.
Yeah. So, yeah, as he's building power, we're cutting back and forth to Chitara going to the gym and realizing she's strong, and her getting, like, a slinky dress, and, like, her building up into, like, this confident thing, and also cross-cutting to Diana and Steve going on adorable dates. This is where the dress-up thing happens. And there's one sequence here I do quite like, is when they go to the Museum of Aviation, or where the hell it is, that thing in D.C., Steve being like, that whole sequence of Steve being like, oh man, the future's fucking ridiculous, was nice. Yeah,
it was all so long, and I remember being angry very, in the very first much movie how I was irritated there was a let's try on goofy outfits scene with her, and they did it again with this, and it was excruciating. It was just like, it should have just been done under music of her, like, thumbs up to that outfit, thumbs down to that, like, it was awful. It was not particularly funny. It was desperate, kind of watching Chris Pine trying to get anything out of this scene. And then, then he's like, then it's this, just, they spent so much time in the Aerospace Museum, and,
well, it was just interminable. Where he goes up trying to figure out the escalator was fun. The breakdancing bit, like, there was some adorable things.
The breakdancing thing was interesting because, you know, he's from before the 1920s. But racism doesn't exist, so it's fine. Don't worry about it.
Well, I mean, I think in all of these movies, like, every single movie based in the past, is that since he's a hero, he wasn't racist. It's just, I think you just kind of have to accept that.
It's just a given. And yeah, and like, oh my God, he's seen a subway train, because trains didn't exist
Well, that part was very confusing because I think that he even had subways back in the 19
they
whatever.
Did. Yeah, they absolutely did.
Like that was weird because I think like London or whatever, the guy that like did all the shit in London, that was in like the late 1800s when he was building all that. Yeah. So that was weird. But I like the escalator. That was fun because I remember the first time I went on it and that was great. And the plane museum I quite liked because he's like a flyboy.
I just wanted the movie to get going at this point. Like if this was 20 minutes into the movie, sure. Yeah. But God dang, this is
well,
like
that dress montage almost killed me. Yeah. That was tough.
And that's like, that's it. That's the '80s. You're welcome, everybody.
Yeah. I don't really get it. So yeah, we're cutting back and forth between that. And, I don't really know what happens next, except for they try to break in.
Well, so he Maxwell Lord has, cause he's already been accosted by someone that's figured out his Ponzi scheme, and Maxwell Lord goes to that guy and sort of fesses up, but gets the guy to wish that he had all his oil hit. And so, yeah, oh my God, all this oil hit. Tanks or his fields have all hit, despite no evidence showing that would ever happen. So he becomes like this big oil guy. And so he gets a seat with, or a meet with the king of crude. You see him listed on his magazine, the Emir of Egypt, which is not a person that ever existed. But also apparently is not an area that has oil normally.
No, I'm pretty sure he does. I think he was in business with Prince Ali, Glorious He, Ali Ababa. I think they were like besties.
Is that a professional wrestler?
No, that's Aladdin.
Prince
Ali, Glorious He, Ali Ababa. Oh, strong as 10 regular men, fabulous he. I got most of those words wrong, but you get it.
I got it, yeah. Did you have to do that to get into the Proud Boys?
Yeah, they made me say all that, and then they put a Michael Jackson in me.
But so they know that he's going to meet with that guy because they break into his office. They figure out somehow that I think it's at this point where they.
No, who cares? The point is they find out that he has the wishing stone, break into his place to try to get to it because it's all packed with people now because he's popular, and. I don't know how, but this ends them with getting in a plane.
Yeah, okay, I remember now because Kristen Wiig fesses up to giving it to Maxwell Lord.
That's right.
Him being a thing, whatever. So they go to his office and think, oh, he's probably going to meet with this Emir, and he's been after this wishing stone, and that's I think where she also figures out that it was the band around the stone was written in the language of the gods.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, that was dumb.
Yes, it was. So they're like, well, we got to get to Egypt right away. And well, fortunately, she knows a place to get a plane immediately.
Oh, that's right.
Okay. And that he can just automatically fly, no problem, because I'm sure flying a biplane is exactly the same as flying a fancy new jet.
There's a lot wrong here.
And then, hey, remember how? You got blown up in a plane with explosives. You know what I think you would really enjoy right now is flying through a whole bunch of explosives. Because there's this firework display. And like,
no, no, that's where you're wrong, John. That's where you're wrong.
Idiotic.
No, no, that's where you're wrong. He gave himself up in World War I, but he flew into the explosives that time. This time, the explosives are flying at him.
Okay, it
totally
is
totally different.
It is extremely different. Well, either way, he doesn't seem bothered by it.
Yeah, don't you understand angular momentum, bro? Yeah,
not in this movie. Good Lord. Yeah. People make the wildest jumps in this movie. Like, not even just talking plot-wise, but like, I'm leaping at a 45-degree angle. Now, all of a sudden, I'm going straight up, and now I'm kind of landing. Yeah,
we're gonna get to some physics problems later, but I can't even express to you how embarrassed I am that I liked when they made the jet invisible.
Okay. So, like, I get the fan service of, like, oh, yeah, her invisible jet, which is always kind of dumb, but whatever. But, like... That the way they go about it is so dumb.
She's like, I'm trying to figure out how my dad, in quotes, God, hit our island. I made a coffee cup disappear one time, and then she starts doing that rave dance where you just kind of move your hands around.
Yeah, she dances just, like, yeah.
Just, in this movie, she figures out how God works, her dad God, by doing rave dances. And she also learns how to fly. It's. All right, let's keep going.
Yeah, it's just hand voguing, and then some like blob shows up and makes the plane invisible.
It's so stupid. That's why I can't hate it. It's like she's just Oh yeah, I rave dance because my dad made my island invisible. It's just but so.
And like, if it had anything to do with anything other than that scene, you know, okay, I guess. But yeah, it absolutely did not matter. They made it invisible for no good reason. I mean, like, yeah, I guess technically to you know, secretly fly over there, but it really, you couldn't thought of a better way.
Yeah,
but they so, get yeah, over
they,
there.
They get over to Egypt to run into the prince,
mm-hmm. the emir.
And there is, I thought he was called a prince.
They do call him like your majesty or something, but oh, okay. He is listed as the emir.
And he wishes for his sovereign land back, and this giant wall pops up, which is
okay. Yeah,
yeah, John, would you like?
Well, okay, there's a couple of things.
Okay,
first of all, you have a movie starring an Israeli actress, and you're going to make a whole thing about like how settlements are evil, and you know, the rightful owners of the land. I mean, it's terrible even without her. But also, the evil Arabs want this land back. Yeah. But also, the guy rules Egypt.
Yeah.
What is he reclaiming? A wall comes up in the middle of Egypt. That's his land. What is happening there?
It's like, you know, different ruling.
Oh, okay. I mean, I guess technically, like, his ancestral lands. Like, it could just be like, well, your dad owned the sheep farm or, you know, this farm over here. I don't know.
And but, then the awkward shot where, like, the wall went right up through these people's drinking water. And they show, like, little kids that need a drink. And it's just like, this is, like, obvious, the movie.
Yeah. And just, it was really kind of poorly done, too. There's one part where, like, it's supposed to be, like, rising up underneath a car, and the car isn't reacting to moving up underneath it. Like, it just looks like they took a still photo and just put the wall go up so the car doesn't actually. It was just really, really bad. But yeah, so immediately his wish comes true.
There was a sequence here that I like, though, that car chase sequence that they go on with Diana. There's a couple of nice spots there. I liked her using the lasso on the missile. Was and the way it pays off later, it makes me kind of want to go back and hate it, but I'm going to stick with my original thing of that was cool. Like if I walked to the theater after that scene, I go, that scene was cool. Her kind of being weak and getting shot, I was like, oh cool, like a vulnerable superhero, that's good, instead of her just being like god lady. And that bit where like she's stuck between the two cars and like he comes up from behind and wedges his car in so she doesn't get squished, like there's a couple of nice like action beats
that,
happening
that
here.
One I'll give you, there's a neat shot when he's when he rams the car into the back of the tank, like the camera is in like the back seat looking between the two seats.
Oh yeah.
And it seems like they stitched together two different shots and kind of covered it up with the move of the camera, but it was still really neat. It made it feel like you were in the back seat watching it. And that was like a nice little bit of trickery that I did. One of the, like maybe three things I enjoyed in this movie, the missile thing. I did not enjoy, because it's dumb on another front, dumb on a number of fronts. First of all, like these small children that for some reason cannot hear this convoy of tanks showing up. The actual rescue of the children is really bad looking. Like it's clearly dummies.
Well, in the area of the world they live, they're probably deaf from IEDs at this point.
You're right. They did deserve it. But also there's a fun little thing where Gal Gadot ran into some controversy way back in 2014 where she made this Facebook post supporting the IDF, which she was once a part of, the Israeli Defense Force. A week after an Israeli strike on Gaza killed four Palestinian boys who were playing soccer. But now she's saving them. So that felt a little gross. It felt like watching a movie where like Kevin Spacey breaks up a pedophile ring or like Mel Gibson like takes down a burning cross. You're like, yeah, I don't know. That doesn't feel right.
That was a little awkward. Yeah, I get that's correct.
Yeah. So that was a little, I mean, like the whole like lassoing on a missile, I will give you the concept of that is cool. But just the whole that whole scene was a little goofy. I did like the car wedge.
Yeah, I like when, because I think Wonder Woman is kind of a goofy character to start, and I kind of like when they connect to that kind of side a little bit more.
Yeah,
well, and the movie obviously tonally doesn't get it, but
I think I was also just so excited to see an action scene.
Yeah, that's part of it too.
Because they're like I said, like very little has happened up to this point. Oh, but also I don't know if this is intercut with this. This has happened yet, but you start getting the sense that Kristen Wiig is going too far and is like getting mad with power because she runs into the guy that tried to rape her before again, and he tries again and she kicks the shit out of him. And that's supposed to be bad.
Yeah, that was weird. Also, you know, at some point you got to feel bad for the guy. I mean, obviously he's a street drunk and, you know, that's a mental health issue. Like maybe, you know, that's Batman's job to beat up people with mental health issues.
Nope. He does not deserve any sympathy or empathy. But the guy that almost destroyed the world does. Because he just wanted what's best for his kid.
Yeah, well, he did. And his kid's like a person of color. So, you know, that's...
his kid whose wish inexplicably did not come true.
No, because the kid already wished earlier.
Oh, that's why. Yeah. Well, yeah. I have a question about the way the wishes work.
John, these rules are air fucking tight. I dare you to find something off about this movie.
But it was weird. Because the homeless guy she was nice to before... She's like, yeah, get out of here. I hate you now.
She's going mad with power, cheetah power. He meets with President Ronald Reagan.
Was that supposed to be Reagan?
I think it was supposed to be Reagan adjacent. I think they were trying to like hint at Reagan.
But why? You can't do that. Like if you do a movie have a fake president. Well, I know they did, but I'm saying it's stupid because you can't like we're going back to the 80s. Who knows who was president then? Nobody. No one knows.
Yeah,
this guy looks nothing like Reagan. He's not trying to act like Reagan. I don't understand why they did this.
Yeah, I don't know either. But he had jelly beans on the desk, so it was Reagan.
Oh, they have like a big. I missed that bit.
They have a big punch 'em up fight in the White House, and Gal Gadot's not very strong anymore.
No, and I mean the hero losing their powers in the second movie of a series is not unheard of. I mean, it happens in Superman 2. I feel like Spider-Man 2 maybe even had that.
I think that is Spider-Man 2.
Yeah, the Sam Raimi one. And I think they didn't really do that till the third one in the Christopher Nolan Dark Knight movies. But yeah, that's not an uncommon thing. But I don't dislike the way they did it here. Because she's still like, she's not completely powerless, but yeah, she's not operating at full capacity. And I did like when, so yeah, they get into the White House to try to stop what's her name, Max Lord, and then Cheetah shows up because she doesn't want, she likes her wish, she doesn't want that to go away, and starts fighting Wonder Woman. And this that spin move she does, I don't know what happened, but I thought it was cool. Like Diana starts like trying to like, she tries to like do the thing where she like clanks her bracelets together and creates like a force push or something. And she just like jump spins through it. I'm like, that was cool.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And then that was it.
Yeah. I mean, it's, it would be a nice sequence. I wish there was more of it.
Yeah. But then, Ronald Reagan's voice or like his wish is that we need he wished for more nukes, not peace, not prosperity. More nukes.
Well, that's what it said to Reagan. He's an idiot and then wanted more nukes.
I mean, it would make sense if he was like, if his brain was as gone as people think that it was at that time.
Yeah.
Like, but no, they didn't play that up at all.
Yeah. So it's realized here that Diana, you know, her wish, the side effect is that she's losing her powers. And Chris Pine basically, it's like, hey, look, I got an extra day. This was great, but I got to peace out because you got to rescind your wish or shit's going to go bad. And Diana's, you know, reticent to do it. And they can finally get to say goodbye properly. And you know, mildly emotional. The movie's pretty shitty at this point, so it's kind of hard to, you know.
Well, yeah, so this skips over the Frank the Mayan guy. Because that's right when they come back from Egypt.
Well, whatever. She says goodbye to Steve, rescinds the wish, she gets her powers back. All right. Earlier in the film. Do we really need to talk about it? We've been going for a while.
Yeah, I don't care. I'm just saying it was a dumb scene. I mean, we kind of covered it was a dumb scene.
Okay, yeah, let's... All right, yeah. So they meet with this Mayan shaman. It's kind of racist, and they call it out for being racist, which makes it worse because this movie's sort of racist. And she can read whatever the Mayan language is called, and she finds out that it's bad. She's like, oh, no, it's that god. That's a trickster god.
The god of lies.
Yes, it's and then he's gonna get the staff.
But here's
and then kill Agent Coulson later. Oh, wait, sorry.
Here's the question, yeah. So she tasks, when they're in Egypt, she tasks Kristen Wiig's character with finding out more information about this thing.
Yeah.
When they get back, Kristen Wiig's like, there's... You know, like it's all over the place. It's like it's on like Romulus is holding it on this Roman medal or, you know, all the stuff. But it kind of the path runs that the only thing I found was this like shaman, like a flyer for like Frank the Shaman who can know something about it. And it seems like really dumb and out there. Well, it's all we got. So they go down there, and yeah, it's some weird guy with dreads and like in a crummy squat. They're like, boy, this seems weird. And yeah, your name's Frank. You're a shaman. And then he's got this book that his grandpa had. And then they get the information from there. Why not just have Kristen Wiig find the information?
Yeah.
Like, why was that scene there? It was so annoying. Like, you would have had the same beat, the same, like, you could have said monkey paw 45 times. Why was this man in the movie?
I know it's so long.
It's so long, this movie.
Pretty long. After, you know, that happens, we do, you know, they do the wish where Steve goes away.
Yeah,
he gets all swole again.
Yeah, people are getting more and more wishes, and things are going insane. There's cows because some guy wanted a cow or something.
Yeah. This is where she hitches a ride on a plane because her lasso is a million miles long.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the scene that, of all the meh in this movie, this is the one that actually annoyed me about how bad it was, where she learns how to fly by like harnessing light. This could have been a good scene mm-hmm. if they had a better actress and a better director, because I can just imagine a superhero coming into their powers in that way of like awkwardly, like a newborn fawn trying to learn how to walk with its wobbly legs, mm-hmm. watching somebody try to fly. It's like, oh, this could be so cool. And there was no joy in it. And Gadot's awful. And it's just stupid. And the lasso being a million miles long is dumb. Because I think at some point later or earlier in the film, the lasso was too short and she kind of slipped off the end of it. So it's just, it's so annoying because it's like, oh, this would have been a good scene. And it definitely wasn't.
A couple of things would have made a good scene. One, first of all, it just made me think of the bit in Spider-Man Homecoming where he's in the suburbs and he goes to shoot his web at nothing. And he's like, oh yeah, because there's nothing up there. She does not have that problem. She can just attach it to clouds, I guess. But if it had anything to do with anything, it might have been a better scene. Because it doesn't have anything to do with this sort of wishing. She doesn't work to get it. She just kind of remembers, oh, what if I try? Oh, okay, I can do it. Which isn't really the message of the thing. Like, it felt like it belonged in a different version of this movie that they cut out everything else around it. I mean, good for you. You can fly now. And around this, she after she learns to fly, she immediately goes back home to get her armor that she mentions earlier that, and I love this because this is the armor that you've seen her in the promos for it, which I'd like to point out that those posters for the movie that were all like crazy with the colors, they apparently used up all the colors in those posters because this is a pretty bland ass looking movie.
Yep.
And
not very 80s looking either. It's really like.
But this I forget the character's name, but the like the super best person from her island.
Oh, Asteria.
Right. Like made this great armor to fight, to defend herself from invaders. And they show it. And it's basically like people, the cast of 300 just wailing on this woman. It's a bunch of like shirtless dudes screaming and like playing their swords against her wings. And then they make some comment about her sacrificing herself and saving the day. So it kind of sounds like, well, we built this amazing armor and everyone like donated stuff so we could build this amazing armor for her. Oh, it did not work. She died immediately. But boy, it was neat looking armor.
You're not to say your point is wrong, but you're incorrect in that the line is that she bought them enough time so the rest of the Amazons can go to Themyscira. Is that the Asteria's play was to delay.
Okay.
Like to take all the hits from mankind so the rest of the Amazons can go away. No, I'm not. In no way am I saying this is good. No, exactly. Yeah. I just, it was in the terrible dialogue, in the terrible scene that your point stands, it wasn't so that she could win. It's that she could delay. So the armor did technically, in quotes, work for its purpose. Yeah.
And then they went back and stole it from her grave.
I guess. And somehow it wasn't destroyed. Okay.
Yeah. Why not? But she goes back and it does look cool. You know, it's a neat looking armor, but again, it feels like an afterthought. Because I know, I know that she's weak or whatever, but.
Well, she's strong now because she got her shit back.
Yeah. And then here's where my problems really start, because Kristen Wiig is now aligned with Max Lord. She's already had a wish, but she gets an additional wish. And I don't know if this is because since he's the wishing stone, it's a different wishing stone. She can do it now. But she already wished to be like Diana, but now she wishes, she's like, I don't want to be like anybody else. I want to be something brand new, an apex predator.
I think what that was is, you know how he does his little addendum to get his shit done, what other people are wishing? So he's in this TV studio that connects him to the rest of the world as a MacGuffin thing. And he's getting all these wishes from random people on the street, and they're dying because their wishes are going sideways. He asks her what she wants and then uses one of the rando's wishes to give her that. So it's stupid. It's a workaround. It didn't need to be there, but it's theoretically makes sense just because I don't want to hear someone try to correct us later.
We're also spared from the possibly very interesting transformation scene of her turning into this thing. She just shows up and is now.
Doesn't look very good.
Not
good
at all.
Makeup effects CGI or whatever.
Yeah. Just crazy thought here. Just, and I am not a CG artist. I am not a designer, of that level. But, if you're making a character that moves really fast, and then you're going to have a fight scene with this character, maybe don't make it the same color as the background. You know, because it's everything in this scene is like dark gray and dark blue. Cause it's supposed to be happening at night, but it's just, it is ugly and muddy and boring.
Also, maybe not make it look like someone that should be hanging out with Mr. Mistopheles.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It looked like that recent Cats movie.
Yeah.
The shitty CGI.
Yeah. Not great. But so they have a fight, and then and Wonder Woman's like, you got to renounce your wish. And she's like, no. And so then Wonder Woman's like, oh, sorry. They're fighting underwater. She's like, sorry. And electrocutes her. Like grabs a hold of something and electrocutes her. Wonder Woman is not affected for reasons that I still haven't figured out.
Well, she was like lassoing lightning earlier. So I guess, is that one of her powers? That lightning isn't like a big deal to her?
Apparently so, because that seems odd, but fair
enough.
Well,
I mean, her dad is God. So, I'm not too annoyed by that.
And then she goes and has her final confrontation with Max. And this is really, well, I've got a couple of issues here. We're like, I thought the point of her lasso was that it made you tell the truth.
Yeah, she said something to Steve earlier that it like it can show you other stuff or something. I didn't really understand what
it
was. Okay,
because I must have missed that. Because yeah, it seems weird because she Maxwell Lord has gotten into this he's taken over this military TV thing that can take over all broadcast signals and like through particles like make it seem like you're touching or something. I wasn't real clear, but it's a way for him to get all the wishes of people to wish, and he gets on there and demands people to wish because he's dying from giving too many wishes, and so he's just trying to get even more power and more health, and why not just get more and more and more. And she at one point like is able to secretly like lasso him and gives this tearful speech about how, you know, oh, wishing is bad and you shouldn't wish for things. And the world was better before you showed up, which no, it absolutely was not. It was the 1980s.
Well, it wasn't the apocalypse bad.
No, but like, you know, there was just this random disease that was killing all these people because the Reagan administration wasn't doing anything about it.
Yeah, but that's happening now.
The crack epidemic. There's also, yeah, but my point is that it's not a beautiful world before this guy showed up. And also, this is where my whole thing really, really, where I say this movie is morally repugnant and beyond even just the raping, is that the message of this movie is not be careful what you wish for. It's don't wish. Your wishing is what's causing this problem. Your wishing, your wanting things gave this man power and put him in the position that he was. Because everyone is a venal piece of shit. You know, like, so maybe the little girl that wished, boy, I wish we had our drinking water back. Nope, too bad.
Yeah,
that wish is selfish and awful. Maybe someone wished for world peace. Don't know. That wish gets overridden. You know, all you see are the people that wished for more nukes or, you know, something really selfish, or the guy that wished someone that wished that the Irish would go back. So it was like, I guess, supposed to be in the middle of the troubles.
I don't care. I fuck you if you didn't like that. That was the dumbest thing that's ever happened.
It was extremely dumb, but
it's so, it was great. It's like, arguing with that lady. She's like, I wish all you Irish bastard would go back to Ireland. He's like, I wish you would drop dead. And she just dropped. It's just, it's so dumb. It's great.
But it's aggravating to have this character who is like 700 years old, grew up on an idyllic island where not a care in the world, other than that, like, she couldn't do what she wanted to do.
And there was no dick.
Is lecturing people about how it's bad to want things. That, like, she doesn't try to ever tell Kristen Wiig you don't need to be like me. Like, you're cool in your own way or anything like that. No, it's punishing her for trying to be like her, for wanting something. And I think that's just heinous.
Yeah. Yeah, it's gross.
Yeah.
It's not a good message.
No, it's not. It's absolutely terrible. And I think, and it makes me so mad, because I would be thrilled if this movie were just like bleh. But I think it is actively harmful. I think it's shit.
I mean, I just don't take it that far. I think it's stupidly meh.
Yeah, I think it's an extremely bad message to give to people.
Yeah, I mean, again, you know, that's every superhero movie, if you break it down, is terrible messaging. But,
yeah, I mean, like, obviously there's the sort of Ayn Randian super part, but this is so like on its face about it, where it's like,
yeah,
which like you as a person don't want things. Like, that's not a good message. You know, it's like, well, it's that, you know, like, yeah, that the little kids who were about to get killed by the caravan. I guess they just didn't work hard enough to not get killed by the caravan, you know?
Well, I mean, you are 100% right. But if I can argue a defense, and I'm not saying it's in the movie, but I think what they were trying to do is keep the theme that is barely there of Steve sacrificing himself, is that if you want something that's for the greater good, then it's fine, because that's like giving up your wish, as long as there's sacrifice involved. It's not there. And that's also not all that great, but like,
yeah.
I can see the less morally reprehensible. I could see what she was going for, Patty Jenkins, and missed horribly. But
missed, yeah,
like I don't think she's Stalin. I just think she's incompetent a bit.
Yeah, but I just think and yeah, the fact that it just never crosses her mind that maybe she shouldn't have sexually violated this man.
Like, yeah, that's not... I mean, that's that is remarkable. That's in this movie.
Yeah, that's I mean. It's what a weird choice to make.
Yeah.
Well, she saves the day. Well, we also get this, but before we get this flashback to everything that happened in his life, in Maxwell Lord's life, that turned him into this.
Yeah.
His parents yelled at him for wetting the bed and were abusive. And he watched his dad abuse his mom. And then like the kids at school made fun of him because he was eating tamales and didn't have good shoes. But, you know, if he just worked hard, you know, but he cheated. He cheated and wished for something. And that's bad. That's bad, folks. But you get this big sympathetic thing where he reunites with his son, and his son's like, you know, it's like, oh, I'm not a good person. I did it all for you. You know, I understand them trying to do like a different, I'm not just going to beat the shit out of this guy in the ending, but I kind of wanted more to happen to him.
It was awkward. It was uncomfortable. And so Max and the kid reunite, and then Diana runs into the guy that Steve was in.
Yeah. You know where she runs into him at?
The street somewhere? I don't know.
Yeah, the street during some like fucking Christmas celebration. Christmas, which is all about wishes and hopes. No, but let's cut from you lecturing us about how bad that is to a scene about Christmas. And many people have pointed out that like it looks like a fucking Hallmark movie.
Yeah. It's not good. And she doesn't apologize for raping him, which is then you see like this little girl, she lets go of a red star balloon. Which symbolizes the rise of Mother Russia over the capitalist scum that made this movie, and how they never actually showed the Russians canceling their nukes, and that they're 5 minutes from a total annihilation.
Yep.
End of movie.
Yeah. Well, almost.
Yeah. So there's a mid-credit sequence where this hooded woman is walking in a street, some busy street, and some kind of pole is about to fall on a child. And she stops with one hand. And they're like, thanks, lady. And she drops it. And it's Linda Carter. No. What's her name? Lindsay Wagner.
Nope. Lindsay, you were right the first time.
Who's Lindsay Wagner?
The bionic woman.
Oh, the bionic woman. Oh, it's close. I had a 70s brunette lady that was strong as fuck. Okay. So, and she's like, hey, no problem. My name's Asteria. Wink.
Yeah.
And
it's from my culture.
Oh, yeah. It's from my culture. What's such a bad line? And so she shows up in various superhero shows lately, and she seems like she's not all there anymore.
Mm.
There's something about her face that seems like she doesn't. Like, if you've ever watched like professional wrestlers that are in their 50s that really need the money, and you can tell that they've got severe CTE, she's got that same acting style, and it makes me very uncomfortable to see. Also, this doesn't need to be in the coda.
No, like I don't know if it's supposed to be some setup for something else, you know, like for like, oh, the next one, which they've automatically, they've already greenlit, by the way.
Yeah, apparently this movie did fucking boffo numbers.
Yeah, because it doesn't matter. Like, it does, yeah. The point is that whether or not anyone liked it, y'all engage, you know, everyone engaged with it, and that's enough for them to make another one. Because that's all that matters is the numbers. Like, why not just, just have a scene where, you know, at the beginning when she's fighting mall crimes. I was like, who's that woman? And then it's Linda Carter, and she goes, I wonder. You know, that's fine. Just do something that stupid. Yeah. This was equally stupid, but it was just needlessly tied into this thing. Or better yet, as much as I hate this current trend, although it's specifically, it's more generally relegated to Star Wars of like, you know, bringing back dead people as CG characters or, you know, younger versions of themselves. Just have CG Linda Carter. She would be way more lifelike than whatever Gal Gadot
is doing.
Yeah,
that'd be fun. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so that's the mid-credit sequence. Now, John, now this movie that you hated,
yes,
superhero movie that you hated with an after-credit sequence. Now that you see how bad this can go, admit that Marvel movies are good. Admit it, fucker.
I will not say they're good. I will say
now that you've seen an after-credit sequence, you've seen an old person with a ham-handed cameo like Stan Lee. Admit Marvel movies are good.
I will say Marvel movies are Applebee's. Like, they're there. They're fine. Like, I don't think they're good. I think you can do better.
Marvel movies are Olive Garden.
I am not family when I'm there. No, I mean, yeah, they I will say this. A Marvel movie hasn't inspired this level of ire from me. Like, I've never been this angry, this emotionally. Give me Aquaman. Give me Aquaman. That's what I say.
Yeah, I wish this movie was cheesier. I wish this had more Aquaman to it, because I think Wonder Woman. But you need a competent actress, and that's just we don't have one in this film.
That would have made. I mean, it wouldn't have taken away the stuff that I really really hate. But it's
would have helped. A lot.
It would have helped. Yeah, it would have helped it not feel as long.
Yeah, I didn't hate it as much as you, but like I 100% don't recommend it. It is meh as meh. Like it is bland nothing. It's toast without butter. It's just,
I think it's hateful. I think it is a hateful piece of work, and it's avoid it. Not even like, I'm bored, I'll throw this on. Just it's not worth it.
And, oh yeah, I mean, when I say meh, I don't even mean it's meh like you should watch it when you're bored. Like just it's skippable, but I think if you're on a plane, it's fine.
I don't.
Especially an invisible.
I think if it's on a plane, you should crash that plane. Sorry. Nothing good is coming. That plane is cursed.
I posited we're going to do a new segment on this episode, and I wrote a theme song for it. This is stuff we like. Yeah, it's stuff we watched and it was pretty good. It's a theme song. Okay. I spent like 6 hours writing that.
That was good. I can, the orchestration was a little bit different than what you normally do. And I like you stretching yourself that way. I thought it was a successful experiment.
I was influenced by early Police.
Mm-hmm.
All cops are bastards. what's Sting's name? Gordon Sumway.
Gordon Sumway.
I mean, that's Alf.
You take that back about Alf. Alf was a comrade.
So we want to, because, you know, we hate stuff, we want to talk about things we're watching, especially in the pandemic and because we're all stuck inside. Stuff we were watching, movies and TV shows and whatnot. And I'm going to go first because I only watched one thing that's worth talking about. I just finished Adventure Time, Distant Lands, Obsidian.
Is that the thing on HBO Max?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Adventure Time, which finished up its run a couple of years ago or last year, whatever, recently. They're doing these spin-off kind of longer form episodes, one-off kind of things. There's only been two of them so far. One was about BMO, the robot, which is the patron saint of John and Alex Haid stuff. And this one was Marceline the Vampire Queen and Princess Bubblegum. And it's set in the future after the events of the original Adventure Time, and it's really fun. They are a couple at this point. They're like, you know, they make kissy face to each other, which I like. Because you don't see a lot of lesbian cartoon couples. Which is, I mean, I'm old, so that's progressive for me. I'm sure young kids don't even bat an eye, but for my old ass fucking gravelly knees self, I was like, holy shit. But, yeah, it's on HBO Max. It is really fun. The writing's still crisp. There's some good songs in it. It's, the BMO one isn't great. As much as I love that character, he's not someone that can hold an episode to himself. But if you've got HBO Max, you should check out Adventure Time, Obsidian. It's, especially if you like Adventure Time, there's a really great cameo at the end that I won't spoil, but it is it is a perfect cameo. And it was done tactfully, but recommend it wholeheartedly. And there's some good voice acting. It's great. So watch it.
Excellent. I still need to finish the series. I need to get back to that.
The series just gets better and better till it ends. It is it's really good.
I brought it up earlier in the podcast, but I would I highly recommend Possessor. It's unfortunately called, released here as Possessor Uncut or something like that, but it's Brandon Cronenberg, the son of David Cronenberg. And while you can certainly see shades of his father's work in there, it's definitely its own thing. And it stars Andrea Riseborough, who we've loved before, and she was Mandy in Mandy. And I also wrote
John Carter from Mars.
Yep. Same person. but like I think she's such a phenomenal actress, and I've loved everything she's in, and she is great in this. And it is a mind fuck of a movie. Sean Bean's in it, so you can guess what happens to him. It's great. It's hard to watch. It's you know, violent at times, and definitely does some things I haven't seen in movies before, but definitely that. And then I just received today's late Christmas present, the movie Rockers, which is it was made in the 70s. It stars a whole bunch of reggae artists and other people. And it's mainly just kind of a hangout movie. The story is ostensibly is about the main character, Horsemouth, he wants to get a moped to deliver records, to make some money delivering records. And it kind of just goes from there. But it is so much fun. And I'm not even a big reggae guy, but the soundtrack's great. And it's just a really cool movie. And I recommend it heartily.
Excellent. Thank you for the recommendation from the audience and me, John.
Yes.
So, John, all right, for next week, I think we're going to give a chance. We're going to watch Knives Out by Rian Johnson, because I think he needs to make up for himself after ruining my childhood with his movie Looper. I mean, that's the right way he sent me back in time to kick me in the nuts, that fucking bastard.
It was really cruel. But if you haven't gotten to the point yet where he does send you back, so as soon as you get there, you'll figure it out that it was really... he had no choice.
No, we shouldn't talk about this. It's just, let's hand wave.
Let's just hand wave it away. yeah, there's still inexplicably, at least on Twitter, there's still people that are talking about The Last Jedi for reasons unknown to anybody.
Yeah. I don't know where it started, but there's a redone discussion happening right now over the Star Wars verse.
Like the fact that we're still just litigating that. Like we did an episode about it, like in 2018. Like, just move on with your lives, find something else to do. But we will move on by watching Knives Out.
Hey, you know, Knives Out, Knives Out.
Classic saying, yes.
Do Suns Out, Guns Out, and I just couldn't figure it out. yeah, we're going to do that. It's available probably places. I don't know. I didn't look. Fuck you. I'm not doing your job for you.
I'm not doing my job for me either.
Yeah, well, whatever. No one watches the movies anyway. Yeah, that's been us. You've been you. Follow us on Twitter at JawsPod, and leave reviews places if you want to, because we never tell people to do that. So that'd be good.
And reach out and say hi. Let us know what you think. Let us know if you want us to watch any particular movies. Let us know anything at all.
Yes. Recommend stuff to us, or just say stuff to us. Just something. Reach out. Touch faith.
Grant our wishes.
Yes, I am the Wishmaster.
Mm-hmm. Let me throw that addendum on there. Watch The Wishmaster. It's a terrible movie, but it's got some neat effects, and the plot's basically the same.
Yeah,
and it's much shorter.
Gonna be better than this.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. Bye.
Bye.